from now until Easter Sunday, we're going to be talking about the gospel as tragedy, comedy, and fairy tale. These are different ways of telling stories, different types of stories, and that really is what the gospel, the good news is a story. Now, stories are a structure for understanding the world around us and something that our brain and even our souls crave, that meaning and understanding that we can add to the world around us. Stories have been used as long as humans have had speech. They've been used to pass down history, to teach and instruct, and to share family values. In more ancient times, this was an oral tradition. Probably the picture you get in your head is like sitting around a campfire and the elder is speaking and telling the story of how your family was saved from some great tragedy, or the particular way that your people would describe how the world was brought into being. But story has evolved from there, from cave paintings on the walls to written language and illustration and animation and live performance, audio recording, and film. And finally, like the pinnacle of storytelling, which we have now, Netflix. It's no surprise when we look back at the history of our faith that we see story woven through every aspect of it, all the way through. The Bible itself is a collection of stories and narratives that tell us of some of the history of humanity's interactions with God. It's not just stories per se, but family histories, letters, songs, poems, wisdom, and prophecies taking place over hundreds, even thousands of years. It's quite a story. And these stories in the Bible tell of victory and loss. They speak of betrayal, doubt, love, faith. Stories about sickness and healing, depravity and hope, death and resurrection. Any and everything that Netflix has to offer, you can find here within these pages. Now, am I trying to say we should all stop watching TV and only read our Bibles? Not exactly. I know I could use a bit of a better balance there myself, but that's not my point today. What I am saying is that the Bible, the collected history of God's children and their interactions with him, spans the spectrum of human experience. So our series for the next three weeks will touch on different aspects of story and the human experience as we talk about the gospel as tragedy, comedy, and fairy tale. So this idea is based on a book from the late 70s by an author, poet, preacher, and theologian named Frederick Buechner. And he writes that to understand what the Gospels are all about, you have to understand their unblinking reflection of everyday reality. There's no place in our reading of the Gospel for either sentimental happy endings or soft-boiled hope. That is to say, the meaning of the Gospel is not cheap or easy. Rather, the Gospels record the tragedy of human failure, the comedy of being loved overwhelmingly by God despite that failure, and the fairy tale of the transformation through that love. Is there anything I can do to help with the mic there, guys? Or no? All right. Just keep going. So let me read that again. The Gospels record the tragedy of human failure, the comedy of being loved overwhelmingly by God despite that failure, and the fairy tale of transformation through that love. So these three types of story can be found throughout the Bible, but they're actually each contained succinctly in one story, the first story, in the beginning. In the first story, God created the heavens and the earth, humanity and all the world, and it was good until the first fairy tale, the first comedy, and the first tragedy. So today, we are going to focus on in the first series, message of our series, the gospel as tragedy. So how many of you like happy movies? Or movies with happy endings, at the very least? Yeah. My wife, Barbara, is very much one of those people. She actually will watch movies she's seen before and hope that the characters will make better decisions and that it won't go wrong for them. But it always seems to end the same.
But she says that she's okay with a little bit of tension, but just not too much tension. Me, on the other hand, I think I'm kind of weird. I will watch those movies with Barbara and enjoy them to a certain degree, but I'm way more into like weird science fiction and independent or horror movies that are kind of bleak and depressing and sad, and like I enjoy some movies where everybody dies in the end. And I don't know what that says about me necessarily, but I think there can be some truth of that tragedy as portrayed in some of these more bleak and depressing movies, because that's how life goes sometimes, isn't it? The scrappy underdog team doesn't always score that last-minute point to become the Little League champs. The girl doesn't always get the guy. Sometimes a last-minute, impassioned and rain-soaked plea on the doorstep of your ex-lover doesn't change their mind about how much of a jerk you've been. Life doesn't always give us a nicely wrapped conclusion at the end of each episode. And this is how I think our faith can be presented to us sometimes, isn't it? Come to Jesus and all your problems will go away. Once you're saved, you're safe. Nothing bad is going to happen. Now, it might not be said that explicitly, but I think we can leave room within our consciousness and our faith for some of these ideas to permeate. And then when tragedy comes our way, when something bad happens to us, we can tend to close our eyes and do everything we can to avoid the pain. Or that stands in this sort of cognitive dissonance with what our belief about our faith was, that we weren't supposed to have anything hard happen, and then we just reject the whole thing and walk away. But the tragedy of our own brokenness is a reality of life. When we do our best to avoid it at all costs, it finds us anyway. Denying tragedy not only cuts us off from our own lived experience, but it also serves to keep us separated from God and those around us. Barbara and I recently, well, not that recently, it's been a while, but we had a bit of a tragedy in our house. It was November the 10th, I remember the day still. Barbara was out with our neighbors, and I had the house to myself. It was maybe 10 a.m. on a Saturday morning, and I was going to have a bubble bath, because I like to do that sometimes. It's wonderful. However, I had just filled up the tub. I had some candles as well, and I heard a noise from the TV room outside of our bathroom, and I thought, that's strange. We have a sump pump in our basement that often makes a loud clunking sound after the water has run through it, but the noise just kept going. It wasn't a normal noise. So I opened the door to these two waterfalls streaming through our pot lights in our TV room. I didn't know what had happened, but I found out later a pipe had burst between our ceiling in our basement suite and our landlord's house above. So now I'm panicking. There's water flowing in. Our dog is kind of freaking out, wondering what's going on. And I was getting into the tub, so I didn't have any clothes on, but I quickly put some shorts on. I put some shorts on, and I ran outside and pounded on the back door of our landlord's house, but nobody answered. And so I ran back inside. I quickly unplugged all the plugs in the room where the water was still pouring and threw them up onto the couch and got our dog outside and then grabbed my phone and called both of our landlords, no answer, leaving messages. And thankfully, the neighbors heard me and were like, "Do you say something about water?" And then anyway, it was a whole thing. Finally, our landlords, thankfully, were not too far away. They got home, we shut the water off. But the damage had already been done. And the next, well, almost 5 months, this was November 10th, it was just 2 weeks ago that the final coat of paint was put back on everything. It's been a long, hard process for us. And I'm not, many of you will probably know this already because we tell everyone who will listen. It was a big deal. It was a big deal for us. And when this tragedy happened in our house, we had this brokenness that happened in our safe space, right? Our home was no longer a place of peace. It was a place of stress and construction and waiting for the painter to come and waiting for the drywaller to come. And we even had a second leak happen when they were about 80% finished, and then it started the whole process over again. We ended up having to Well, our landlords did, but replace every water pipe in the whole house because they were the source of the issue, which just prolonged the whole experience. But if we had ignored that second leak, if we had said, oh, this is really tough, but we're just going to close our eyes to it and keep going, the problems would have gotten much worse, and there would have been more leaks springing in different parts of the house. But we acknowledged this tragedy where we were at and went through the long process of making it better. We had to face that tragedy of replacing the pipes, cutting holes in all sorts of walls and ceilings before we could walk in the freedom we're just starting to walk in now of feeling like we have peace in our home again. So today, I'm going to suggest that if we stop closing our eyes to tragedy and stand and face the darkness, our brokenness, we'll be able to start to mend our broken relationship with ourselves, with each other, and with creation around us, ultimately as well with God. And this we can only do by living in that tension of the tragedy of the gospel. So where did this all start, this brokenness that exists in the world? We all have experienced it in some form. Well, as I mentioned earlier, it started from the very beginning. The very first tragedy comes from the very first story that we have, the creation story. I'm going to show what I think is a very beautiful and creative depiction of that creation story, and it comes from a movie that was released a few years ago called Noah, which was directed by a man named Darren Aronofsky. He's one of my favorite directors. He kills a lot of people in his movies. Most of his main characters die, so I love it. It's great. But this clip, I don't know if you've seen the movie Noah or what your thoughts are on it, but I found it to be a very, very human experience of this real great tragedy that existed in the world. So where Noah begins to tell this story, where we find this clip starting, is his family has just got onto the ark. The waters are crashing all around, and all of the people who have been mocking them or persecuting them for building this ark are now pounding on the door to be let in, and Noah has refused. And that is where we find this clip, so let's watch.
Soon everything we knew will be gone. All that is left of creation will lie within these walls. Outside, just the waters of chaos again. You are angry. You judge me. Let me tell you a story. The first story my father told me, and the first story that I told each of you. Beginning. There was nothing. Nothing but the silence of an infinite darkness. But the breath of the Creator fluttered against the face of the void, whispering, "Let there be light." And light was. And it was good. The first day. And then the formless light began to take on substance and shape. Second day. And our world was born. A beautiful, fragile home. And a great, warming light nurtured its days. And a lesser light ruled the nights. And there was evening. And morning. Another day. And the waters of the world gathered together. And in their midst emerged dry land. Another day passed. And the ground put forth the growing things, a thick blanket of green stretching across all creation. And the waters, too, teemed with life. Great creatures of the deep that are no more. Vast multitudes of fish, some of which may still swim beneath these seas. And soon, the sky was streaming with birds. And there was evening. And there was morning. A fifth day. Now the whole world was full of living beings. Everything that creeps, everything that crawls and every beast that walks upon the ground. And it was good. It was all good. There was light and air and water and soil, all clean and unspoiled. Your plants and fish and fowl and beast, each after their own kind, all part of the greater whole, all in their place, and all was in balance. It was paradise, the jewel in the Creator's palm. And the Creator made man, and by his side woman, father and mother of us all. He gave them a choice. Follow the temptation of darkness, or hold on to the blessing of light. But they ate from the forbidden fruit. Their innocence is extinguished. And so for the 10 generations since Adam, sin has walked within us. Brother against brother. Nation against nation. Man against creation. We murdered each other. We broke the world. We did this. Man did this. Everything that was beautiful, everything that was good, we shattered. Now, it begins again.
It's powerful. At the beginning of the story, we see this beautiful cycle of life. This picture of creation started by light and the words spoken, let there be. This fairy tale ideal of perfection, an opportunity for a happily ever after. But instead began a new cycle of tragedy, the breaking of humanity's relationships. We saw in that montage near the end the effects of our rejection of God causing brokenness in ourselves and a cycle of violence against others. And the perfect balance that once existed in all of creation is now dashed on the rock, cast into tragedy. As he said there at the end, brother against brother, nation against nation, man against creation. This is referred to as the fall of man, when sin entered the world and we were lost to our brokenness. Those things we still feel, don't we? That broken relationship, the one that starts between us and God, as with Adam and Eve in the garden. They walked with God and talked with God, and yet they chose to reject him, to go their own way. And that caused this split of relationship between us, humanity, and God. But it also caused a split and a brokenness of relationship between us and ourselves. When we're not living in the identity that God has set for us as his image bearers, as those who he has created in his own likeness, when we choose to walk away from that, that causes a split, I think, in each of us as well. It's another aspect of the brokenness that we feel since sin entered the world. And third, again, as we saw at the end of that clip, we have a brokenness between us and each other. There have been countless wars fought. And even on a smaller scale, we tend to let things fester between us, between sometimes even our own brother or sister, family or friend. And finally, there's this split, this brokenness that exists between humanity and creation, everything in perfect balance. We know, we see these effects going on and on in the world, all around us all the time. Just as Barbara and I have felt this split in our home when what was set up as a peaceful refuge for us is no longer that. We feel these tensions as we go forward. And the Bible continues to feel these tensions and tell stories about humanity's burden of brokenness. Wars are fought and blood is shed. The people of Israel are constantly going back and forth between following God and choosing their own way. Moses leads the people out of Egypt only to wander in the desert for 40 years. David slays Goliath and becomes Israel's king only to commit murder in order to cover up his adultery. God's people are cast into exile, put under the rule of other nations, and into the cycle of tragedy enters again the light with a capital L. This time, the light is made flesh. God becomes a man. This is the story of Jesus entering into the picture. And I think, again, as we look at the life of Jesus, we can tend to kind of attempt to skip over the difficult parts and just get to the hope at the end. We tend to only talk about the happily ever after, which is good, and it is true. But if we jump over the things that led up to that, I think we miss a lot. This is obviously an important part of the story, that Jesus conquered death and rose again. But we can easily forget that Jesus, God and man, human and divine, still lived a very human life. And he was not without tragedy in his life either. We find closer to the end of his ministry a story in the Gospel of John where Jesus gets word that a dear friend of his, Lazarus, has fallen gravely ill. And by the time Jesus arrives, it's too late. Lazarus has died. Pick up the story here in John chapter 11. I wrote 12 in my notes. That's not right. John chapter 11, verses 32 to 37. So Jesus has just arrived and found that his friend Lazarus is dead. And Lazarus had two sisters, Mary and Martha, who you may know from other stories, and they were also friends of Jesus. So picking up in verse 32 here. Now when Mary came to where Jesus was and saw him, she fell at his feet, saying to him, "Lord, if you had been here, my brother would not have died." When Jesus saw her weeping, and the Jews who had come with her also weeping, he was deeply moved in his spirit and greatly troubled. And he said, "Where have you laid him?" They said to him, "Lord, come and see." Jesus wept. So the Jews said, "See how he loved him?" But some of them said, "Could not he who opened the eyes of the blind man also have kept this man from dying?" That's heavy. Jesus wept. There's two of the most powerful words that we read in the Gospels, actually, I think. Even knowing what he was about to do, previously in the chapter, he said repeatedly that Lazarus is just asleep and I'm going to wake him up. His plan all along, and if you've heard the story before, you know that he raised Lazarus from the dead after this. But even knowing that that was his plan, he still stopped in that moment. He entered into the pain of those around him and, I think, felt that pain within himself as well. And even after the miracle of resurrection happens in this story, this is the moment that both Jesus and Lazarus, which I found reading again, both Jesus and Lazarus were targeted by the religious leaders to be killed at this point. They weren't just going after Jesus. They saw all of the miraculous spreading of the good news of Jesus that happened because Lazarus had been raised from the dead, and so they were plotting to kill him. It's not long after this story that we find Jesus alone in sorrow and despair, crying out to God to let him not face this darkness ahead of him. His three close friends nearby have failed him. Another of his followers walks up and with a kiss betrays him, handing him over to those seeking to kill him. It's in this moment that we see, as Frederick Buechner writes in his book, Jesus shares with us the darkness of what it is to be without God, as well as showing forth the glory of what it is to be with God. That's powerful. I'm going to read that again. Jesus shares with us the darkness of what it is to be without God, as well as showing forth the glory of what it is to be with God. This is a radical tension. This is Jesus weeping next to the tomb of his friend. This is Jesus agonizing in the garden. This is Jesus on the cross, fully God and fully man, crying out the words of disorientation from the Psalms, "My God, why have you forsaken me?" Now, is this God turning his back on his son or on himself? I don't think so. Every step of the way, Jesus shares with us the darkness of what it is to be without God, as well as showing forth the glory of what it is to be with God. In this ultimate act of empathy, love, and tragedy, Jesus faces directly into the darkness. He's been given plenty of opportunity to avoid this suffering. He's prayed for it to be taken away. His followers have encouraged him not to do this. They've gotten after him when he says that he is going to have to go and die. He's kept silent before an indifferent government official, Pilate, who seems to rather have not gone through with the whole thing. Jesus was silent. He could have at any point walked away from this path and not taken that cup of suffering that was placed before him. And yet, there he is. And we'll talk about this more as we lead up to Easter. But there he is, suffering, dying, alone. His arms outstretched in this tragic stance of inclusion, beckoning all of us who stand in the dark to come towards him. Inviting us all to stand surrounded by darkness though we may be and seek out those around us with that same tragic stance of love. On the cross, Jesus shares with us the darkness of what it is to be without God, as well as showing forth the glory of what it is to be with God. We are not alone. You are not alone. When we see the gospel as tragedy, we see ourselves broken, lost, stuck, cut off from God, ourselves, each other, and creation all around us. But the good news, the beauty of the gospel is that our salvation is at hand. The kingdom is coming and has now come. The one who offers us a restored relationship with God, who tells us who we truly are, who leads us towards each other, and who longs for all creation to be at peace, he stands with us. He's not taking us immediately out of the darkness, but he's standing with us, facing the darkness alongside us, his arms open wide. So maybe you feel like your life is a tragedy. Maybe some of these things are really relating to you this morning. Like nothing has or is going your way. Maybe you feel lost, alone in the dark, broken and cut off from those around you. Now, I'm not going to tell you that everything will work out fine or encourage you to just have more faith or just trust God a bit more. It'll be okay. I want to tell you that it's okay to just be, if that is where you are. In place of an empty platitude, I offer you these words from Father Gregory Boyle, a Jesuit priest from Los Angeles. These are powerful words. God protects me from nothing, but sustains me in everything. Band, you guys can come up, band, as we continue here. God protects me from nothing, but sustains me in everything. That's a challenging thought. I'm not saying that God doesn't care about any of us. I'm not saying that his heart isn't broken when we are broken. In fact, quite the opposite. He's not interested in just giving us an easy way out. But he's interested in sustaining us in the midst of any and everything that we face in life. That, I believe, is the truth of the promise that he will never leave us or forsake us. It doesn't mean that our life is going to be all happy and all good all the time. If we can acknowledge where we are, open our eyes and face the darkness in our life, whether that be sickness, financial burdens, a broken relationship, the unhealthy cycle of addiction, a struggle with mental health, or that of someone you love, the loss of a loved one, or even some unnamed fear or great sadness in your life, something maybe you can't even point to or put your finger on, but you just know deep in your soul. There is hope in the gospel. There are words of truth to be spoken, such as victory, wholeness, restoration, peace, and love. And we'll talk about those in the next coming weeks. But not yet. For those of us in the middle of our tragedies, we cannot speak the truth of those words. Not yet. Before we can get to that point, we have to stand here, facing the darkness, being still, knowing who God is, knowing that God is. And when you're still and your eyes adjust to the darkness, you'll see that there are others around you. All of us who decide to stand together here in community, here at Yorkson, right here, we're here. Perhaps in the midst of our own tragedy, our own darkness, or perhaps not. You might be walking in a season of hope and peace, victory. We want to celebrate with you and rejoice and lift our voices together. But we also have to remember that the whole truth of the gospel and of our humanity is that none of us are untouched by darkness. None of us are untouched by tragedy. This is where that example of empathy found in Jesus comes in again. That tragic, inclusive stance. If we can listen to each other's stories, no matter how dark, we can stand together, allow ourselves to be changed by those around us. We can move towards restoration with one another, healing wounds and carrying burdens together. You see that in the picture of creation in its wholeness and in its goodness. It was not good for man to be alone. It's not good for us to be alone, and we're not. We're here together, moving through the darkness towards the light of God. And that is the call of the gospel in tragedy. Jesus is the light that wants to signal and start a new cycle of creation in each of us today. Jesus is drawing us to himself. But as with creation, we must experience that tragedy of the empty void before it can be filled with the light. And that is our prayer today, in the midst of darkness and tragedy. Let there be light.